I'm Kevin DeCristofano.
I'm Sean Flanagan.
And we are the Ninja Turtle Nerds, your weekly podcast that's covering the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics one dialogue-heavy issue at a time. That's what we got going on today.
Quite a bit.
What do you got going on, Sean? What's new with you?
What's new with me? I saw Sonic. That was pretty good.
Sonic the Hedgehog. See, I refuse to accept any version other than the cartoon series we grew up with. All three of them.
All right, that's fair. No, like it's,
no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, I saw that in Morbius. Morbius was it was a movie. Not really sure what they were trying to do, but
make money.
Well, they didn't
with minimal effort.
They didn't do too well with that, but yeah. I mean, it was entertaining. It was hard to complain about it. I just don't understand, like, whatever they're trying to do with connecting it to the other villains, and I don't know. But yeah, I've just mostly been up to that, and it might not be out by this point, but the Cowabunga collection, I think it's weird, like, the games they made online compatible are the arcade games, which I expected, but then it's just Hyperstone Heist and the Super Nintendo version of Tournament Fighters, and I thought the Super Nintendo Turtles in Time would at least be included too, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, who knows what's going to happen by the time this episode is up.
Yeah, they might cancel the game entirely.
Exactly. I don't even know if I'm going to use the online capabilities there. I tend to just play one player games. I learned one of my new pet peeves in games, one thing I can't stand because I'm still doing Final Fantasy VII Remake on hard mode. Yeah. I cannot stand when a boss can, like, juggle you. Like, you get hit and you go up in the air and then they just keep hitting you before you land.
Oh, yeah.
That's so, like, it's like, just make the initial attack take whatever amount of damage this juggling is going to take, because it's just slowing things down. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. Like, let me get in my hit now, you know? It's so aggravating.
Yeah.
Ban juggling from all video games.
I can't think of the last game I played that had a boss that did that. That seems like an incredibly ancient, like, concept.
Well, there's a few in that game. You can bounce around pretty good, and there's nothing you can do about it until you land.
Wow.
Yeah, they also have some enemies that will, like, grab you, and like, you're just, like, in their grip. And you can switch to a different character and attack them, but the character they have is pretty much immobilized until they're done with that attack. But enough about video games. Let's get into comic books, because those are the only two things we care about. Today we're here to talk about the Image Comics Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Volume 3, if you will, Issue Number 12. It is untitled, as are the rest of them, as we've said all season long. A few different names here. So last episode, I talked about how the names have been consistent, and yeah, there's like two different ones. The cover artist is Frank Fosco still. Story, Gary Carlson still. Pencils by Frank Fosco. Inks by Mark Hakey. That's different. And lettering by Pat Brusseo. So maybe because this issue is so dialogue heavy, they brought in a different lettering person. I don't know, but it's there's so much dialogue in this episode, in this issue.
They brought in the script and went, "Whoa, no! I can't write that many words.
We need to bring in the big guns." And the cover date on this bad boy is December 1997. So let's get in the Wayback Machine. Go take a look at December 97.
This month in entertainment.
So some of the movies you could have seen in December of 97, Good Will Hunting.
Ah, yes.
Movie that people still talk about. We talk about a lot of movies on this podcast where we're like, oh, nobody remembers that. People definitely still remember Good Will Hunting.
That's a funny...
Pretty much any time Ben Affleck or Matt Damon come up in conversation, it still comes up in conversation.
It's funny to go back and watch that and see a young Daredevil slash Batman and a fully clothed Eric Selvig trying to take advantage of Jason Bourne. I don't think Casey Affleck did any, like, franchise stuff, but...
Also, this month we have Scream 2 Cruise Control.
They went with December again, huh? Interesting.
They created that whole horror in December fad thing. Tomorrow Never Dies, the James Bond film with my favorite Bond. Don't think I've ever seen that one, though.
You've never seen that one?
I played
one?
The game.
Oh.
No. I've only seen... Well, you showed me a bunch of Bond movies back in the day, and then I think... I don't think I've seen anything past GoldenEye, to tell you the truth, but I liked what Pierce Brosnan did in that.
Tomorrow Never Dies, kind of ahead of its time, because when it came out, all that evil media mogul thing seemed ridiculous, and...
Well, it has tomorrow in the title.
Yeah, that's true.
They were letting us know. I remember the video game, there was a lot of, like, anticipation for it, because GoldenEye was obviously such a huge Nintendo 64 game.
It was nothing like it.
Nothing like it. It was completely different team, same publisher, I think, but completely different team, and it just, like, did not meet expectations. I think the battle mode was not as good as well. Like, all you had to do was copy what GoldenEye did and, like, give... Basically, because, you know... Games were so basic back then. Just basically, I keep saying basic, but games were so, you know what I mean? There was only so much they could do.
Yeah.
If they had just done the same gameplay style as GoldenEye with different maps, it would have been like DLC today. Because that's what Perfect Dark did. Perfect Dark is GoldenEye DLC at the heart of it. You know, it's extra missions and extra the maps because... Perfect Dark even has some GoldenEye maps in it as a throwback.
And it's funny because when the World Is Not Enough game came out, they went back to the GoldenEye format and it was, I guess, too late.
Yeah, people had probably moved on to like Modern Warfare or something by then. The first person shooter craze was out. You were no longer the best game in town. Sorry, Bond. Spice World also came out in December of 97. We can't neglect that because it's a cult classic.
I gotta get around to watching that. It's just one of those 90s movies I haven't seen.
I've heard the plot described on various podcasts, but I haven't seen it yet either. It sounds insane, which I love.
Well, insane is good. Yeah, all right. I'm gonna have to see if that's on anything.
Also this month, The Postman...
Oh, boy. Which,
didn't they make a video game recently that's like a lot like that? The Hideo Kojima made some kind of game where you're like...
Death Stranding. Yeah, it's not really like The Postman, but yeah, I could see where you would...
Oh, okay.
Because you just deliver stuff in the game. Yeah. I remember that being like a huge deal like when it came out and then it tanked and then years would go by and then occasionally I'd meet someone who saw it and went... You know, it's not that bad. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it was like another Waterworld situation where it didn't lose as much money as Waterworld, but they had high hopes and they did not meet them.
Kevin Costner and the apocalyptic future does not equal box office apparently ever.
And then also from this month, Justice League of America, which... I went down a rabbit hole when I saw this because it wasn't one I was familiar with. So CBS did this made-for-TV movie that I knew nothing about. Like,
really?
I knew like about the unreleased Fantastic Four movie, and I know about like those old Captain America TV movies and like the Trial of the Incredible Hulk. I don't know how I never knew about this Justice League movie that apparently CBS did made for TV in 1997. Apparently it's terrible. Like, I got fascinated from the little bit that I saw online. I think you and I should watch this for like a bonus episode or maybe like a Patreon exclusive or something.
I know it's intrigued.
Not Turtles related, but I feel like we need to dissect this thing.
Who's in it?
I don't think anyone famous. I didn't look that up. Let me see. What is this? It has... Yeah, I don't know any of these people. Matthew Settle. John Kesser, Kim Oja. Michelle Hurd. Alyssa Donovan.
Oh.
I recognize her from Clueless. She played Guy's girlfriend, Guy being the Green Lantern.
Wow, they went with Guy Gardner?
Yep.
Interesting.
But, like, the Justice League lineup here, we've got Guy Gardner as the Green Lantern. We've got... Who is Ice? A fictional character. I don't know who Ice is. The Atom, Ray Palmer.
Okay.
I know him. He's pretty cool. Fire. So they got Fire and Ice.
I don't know either of these characters.
The Flash... Barry Allen version, of course, because that's the only one they ever seem to want to go with. Martin Walters. Okay, don't know the guy's girlfriend. Martian Manhunter is in it, apparently. And the villain is Weather Wizard.
So they went with a Flash villain. Interesting.
Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, we'll talk about it off podcast, but I think we should definitely watch this and talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
Billboard songs. I already went over this last episode. Candle in the Wind / Something About the Way You Look Tonight is still the number one single. It's going to be the single for the rest of the year. We'll find out what beats it next issue in January. Video games. Got some video games here. The Nintendo Power cover is Diddy Kong Racing, which you and I were talking the other day about this thing that this thought that I had where it's weird. I used to be super into racing games.
Yeah.
I feel like as soon as I got my driver's license, that went away. Because like I was huge into Diddy Kong Racing.
Diddy Kong Racing.
Mario Kart, F-Zero, Cruisin' USA, San Francisco Rush, Top Gear was a big one on Super Nintendo. I remember that was a big deal because after you beat it, you got all the courses again, but now they were at nighttime.
Yeah.
But yeah, I used to be super into racing games, and like after I got my driver's license, I did not care anymore. And I remember Diddy Kong Racing was a game where I had one of those like steering wheels with the pedal they would sell that you would plug into your Nintendo 64, and I would drive around with that, like just driving around the maps.
Yeah, Diddy Kong Racing was fun. Like, I guess Mario Kart 8 kind of just took everything from it and mashed it into their games, but I liked having, like, the options to pick different vehicles and stuff.
I like that they incorporated, like, adventure game stuff in. Like, it was like a Mario 64 mixed with a racing game because, like, you didn't have circuits. Each stage was, like, its own level, and there were different objectives you could do. There was like the coin races where you had to collect all the silver coins and then come in first place.
Yep.
There was obviously a regular race. I forget all the different ones, but they treated it more like an adventure game than a racing game. There was a boss even. Each zone had like a boss that you would race.
Yep, I remember that. No, that was a fun game, and the only time Conker was clean.
No, there was the Game Boy Conker game, too.
There's a Game Boy Conker game?
Yeah, it came out way before then. So it was supposed to be in conjunction with his Nintendo. I was huge into Conker at the time because he was the racer I used in Diddy Kong.
Yeah.
So because he was my racer, I was like, oh, I'm going to want to follow his other games. Like, I'm going to follow this character. So I remember reading all about him at the time in the magazines. And so what happened was he had a Game Boy game that was supposed to come out with his Nintendo 64 game. And his Nintendo 64 game was supposed to be 12 Tales. I think at one point, Conker Goes West might have been a title, and then they changed it to 12 Tales. But either way, it was a lot like Banjo-Kazooie. And the problem was they eventually thought it was too much like Banjo-Kazooie, and Rare was starting to see that, like, people were talking about their games and reviewing their games by saying, like, oh, here's another cute animal adventure game from Rare. You know, 9 out of 10. Of course, they do it great every time, but we'd like to see them do something different. So they basically took all the assets they had already developed for this cutesy Conker game, and they remixed the whole game, obviously redid the whole story and dialogue and everything, and changed some of the stuff a little bit, and made the game that we have.
That's great.
And all those changes delayed the game, so it was supposed to come out with the Game Boy game, so the Game Boy game still has cute Conker from, like, their original. And you can see on YouTube, like, preview footage and, like, gameplay footage of the game they were developing that Conker almost was before the attitude adjustment came. It was very much like Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, I was say, I was like, can't really do... Yeah. They didn't really do many franchise things, because I'm still shocked there was only one Jet Force Gemini game.
Yeah, I loved that. You're preaching to the choir there, man. Like, I remember, I think I've said this on the podcast before, there were a lot of games where I was like, this is going to be my thing. Like, I was always trying to find my thing.
And then I remember
when Jet Force Gemini was one of those where I was like, this is going to be my thing. Like, I'm going to get every Jet Force Gemini game. I'm going to follow this franchise to the end because I loved it. Winback was another one of those where I didn't play Metal Gear Solid for the longest time because I had Winback, and they were very similar. And boy, did I pick the wrong horse on that one.
Though, they at least put it on the online, so it got a little bit of a shelf life, but yeah, it's just funny.
It's a good game.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad game at all. Just, I mean, I guess now it's funny because we live in the age of franchise. So when somebody does come up with something that's not a franchise, you're more inclined to play that.
I could talk about those games forever, but we should probably move into other segments here, like the TV events of December of 97. This was a month of cancellations. Oh. We should talk about some of these shows. Yeah, everything was leaving. December 4th, Extreme Ghostbusters ends after one season and 40 episodes.
I thought that went longer.
Well, 40 episodes is a lot for a season of a cartoon. I wonder, that must have been like, was that like a daily cartoon? That's crazy. December 6th, The Magic School Bus ends after four seasons and 52 episodes. See, they had three more seasons and only 12 more episodes. December 7th, Our Real Monsters ends after four seasons and 52 episodes, same as Magic School Bus. December 9th, okay, this was another rabbit hole I went down. So, The Tony Danza Show ends after one season and 14 episodes.
Nine of those
14 were unaired.
Nine?
Yeah, wow. Only five episodes aired. And the weird part is, Tony Danza won Favorite Male Performer in a New TV Series at the 24th People Choice Awards for The Tony Danza Show. So those must have been a great five episodes.
Wow.
And then for some reason, I guess nobody was watching, so the nine they had filmed never got aired.
That's crazy.
December 21st, Wienerville ends after two seasons, 68 episodes. I like that show on Nickelodeon. December 27th, I didn't know this show was still going. Hee Haw ends after 26 seasons and almost 700 episodes. 655 episodes.
I thought that had ended like in the 70s.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know what channel it was on, but almost 700 episodes there.
Wow, there's almost 700 hee-haws.
And December 15th, the World Wrestling Federation chairman Vince McMahon announces the introduction of the Attitude Era, a term used by WWF for its adult-oriented programming, on Raw is War during a segment entitled The Cure for the Common Show. The WWF Attitude's scratched logo also makes its on-screen debut with the episode, replacing the New Generation's block logo. Big day for wrestling. And there were two episodes of Saturday Night Live that month. December 6th was hosted by Nathan Lane with musical guest Metallica. I've never seen this credit before. So musical guest Metallica, and then it says musical guest Metallica with their guest Marine Faithful.
So the music guest brought a guest.
Yeah, I guess. And then December 16th, much more straightforward, it was hosted by Helen Hunt with musical guest Hanson. And they all had the same haircut. So, Sean, tell our listeners where they can find this comic book.
So you can find this on Comixology and in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Urban Legends, Volume 1.
All right, buckle in, folks. We're already kind of going long here, and this is not going to be a short description. So
no,
let's
it's
start
not.
Talking about the cover and then get into the book, because this is a complicated issue of Turtles. So
a
the
bit.
Main cover, the main cover is Raphael. I blanked on his name for a second there. Raphael.
The red one.
He's in front of a wall, and they like kind of... That you see like some smoking guns that shot at him, and there's some fallen foot soldiers in front of him, and it's an okay cover. I don't have much to say about it.
This is the rare time where I liked both covers. I mean, neither one of them spectacular, but I feel like the Urban Legend one's
yeah, the other
cool.
cover is almost a panel straight out of the comic book, which I always love when they do. I hate when the cover has nothing to do with the comic, which I gotta give Image credit so far. Most of these covers do involve stuff that happens in the comic. So,
yeah, even that one.
For that.
So, they stayed consistent.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than someone being on the cover of a comic and they're not even in the issue.
You know, like when there's 700 variants.
If it's a variant, it's okay. But, like, there are times that these comic companies, mostly the big two, DC and Marvel, will have a main cover A that is, like, Batgirl or something, and she's not even in the issue or something.
It's really weird when she's not even in the company.
Batgirl on this issue of Spider-Man. So moving on into the issue, the first thing we see is a space station. Floating in outer... I'm assuming they're in space. They could be in high atmosphere. I don't know. But I'm going to say space. It tells us exactly how high they are.
Yes, it does.
1,263.5 miles above Chicago, it says. So, if that's in outer space, you know more than I do. I don't know.
I was surprised it took this long to get the turtles back in space.
Well, they ain't doing much up there.
No.
Vanguard is taken the turtles, and I guess if you want to differentiate him, the cyborg, to the ship that orbits Earth, and he's explaining to Leonardo that Vanguard is a soldier from another galaxy sent here to guard Earth against an invasion from his people's, like, archenemy, right? His species nemesis.
Yeah, he's a terrible security guard because he lets everybody else through.
And then Michelangelo walks in, and I honestly for a second thought this was going to be like a Venus de Milo introduction or some, like, I didn't know where the timelines lined up there. Maybe who's the other one? Not Jenica.
No.
But I don't know.
Yeah, there is one more. You'd think one of us would know. Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa, yes. Some, I thought this character would have something to do with, but I guess not yet. It's too soon. So Michelangelo comes in and he's got a female turtle with him. It's his new main squeeze here. And it's, I just don't like anything about this. This whole scene. I don't like that the Image comics want to make the turtle so horny all the time. It's, I get that they're teenagers, but like, I don't know. I don't feel like I would read human, like, comics about humans that were like this. I wouldn't want it either. You know, it's not the aspect of teenagery that I want to read about.
I get the intent, but the execution just doesn't work.
Yeah, there's something just like vaguely almost offensive about the way this whole thing turns out. Because what happens is, if for the listeners who aren't reading along, Michelangelo comes in with this female turtle. Again, we thought it was going to be Venus de Milo or something. And then Vanguard, who's an Image Comics superhero that we talked about a minute ago, it's his ship. He tells him that this, he tells Michelangelo, this isn't a turtle, man. This is Lurch.
It's such a weird name to go with. This is my shape-shifting artificial intelligence, Lurch.
Yeah, and Michelangelo's first reaction is like, that doesn't sound like a very feminine name or something like that. And then it turns out this thing is like a shapeshifter. And do you think this was an intentional reference? Because what Lurch shapeshifts into after it's not a female turtle anymore. I don't know what pronouns it uses, but what it changes into next looks like the like fire monsters from the NES game, except it's not on fire, but it's like, picture that if it was mud instead of fire. Like, it's like this purple goo.
I don't think that they would have known to reference that, so I'm going to just say they thought they came up with something different.
Well, the game had been out for like, what, 6-5 years at this point, right? They could have.
I mean, I don't think it might be,
I don't know either. I'm not saying it definitely is, but something to think about.
So through this whole issue, I have so many notes that just are like, that's so Image. Because when Mikey like finds out that it's a ungendered artificial shapeshifter, he asks if anyone...
He says it has the intelligence of a dog.
Well, I like that part too. But Mikey asks for Drano to clean his mouth out. And I'm like, oh, that's so Image. Like, that's all I could think.
Yeah.
But I do like when he's explaining to Leo, it's like, oh, he's like a pet. And then Leo's like, so if a turtle got up, and he's like, okay, I guess I could see where that's offensive. It's like, he's like an appliance. And I'm like, that's kind of offensive too, really.
Yeah. So then the story moves along. They take like 2 pages for this gag. A little bit more, as a matter of fact. Like 2.5 pages for this gag. And Vanguard takes all the turtles into this other area of the ship where Roxanne Wells from last issue, Vanguard's girlfriend, she is researching Johnny Reburn, who, if you missed last episode, is the murderer who became this weird alien brainiac type villain. Or we think it's him. I don't think they've officially confirmed it yet, but
yeah, I'm still confused, and I read it just before we started, so I have no idea.
So this is where the heavy dialogue comes in. This page here and a few others coming up. There's so much dialogue here. It's so, like, I remember turning this page when I was reading it for the first time and being like, oh my God, this is one of those comics where this page is like a book.
And I mean, and there were, I mean, guests.
It's not that I can't read a book. It's just like, this reminded me of like the guest era.
Yeah, guest era.
Where they were trying
Mirage.
To do like four issues in one issue.
Yeah, I had flashbacks to that. And I thought it was weird, and maybe I'm wrong, but this is the second child killer Image has had. So is that like a trope of their company?
I think it's just a 90s comics thing of like, we're going to be edgy, you know, and especially Image, but they pretty much all fall to it. Like Batman comics had a lot of this at the time, and a lot of just like, we're going to be edgy. There's going to be like child murderers, and this ain't your dad's comic books, bro. This is like for adults. There's going to be blood and and people, they're going to have swear words in there, even though we're going to use asterisks and stuff to make it so you can't read them.
I just thought it was weird. I was like, wow, you guys went with that again. Okay.
So yeah, they say that Reburn has killed 28 children, and one of them managed to escape and notify the police. And so he was basically sentenced to 12 consecutive life terms. But, like, kind of like the Suicide Squad, I guess, after he got sentenced, they were like, all right, well, if you want, instead of 12 life terms, we could send you out in outer space to do these space experiments that are dangerous. And he said, sure.
Which, when they introduced that in the last issue, or even the issue before, I don't remember, but it sounded like a pretty like interesting novel idea, and then you find out in this issue it's like, no, we sent him, and then it was deemed too cruel and unusual, so we didn't send anyone else. And I'm like, you had a whole like great idea there that you could have done like a spinoff series with.
And they don't just send him like to Mars. Like, it sounds like this guy, like, I forget how far away they eventually say, and this is way too much dialogue to comb through. But
he crashes on Jupiter.
There are parts where they're exactly, yeah, like they're like, okay, he did this in the asteroid belt, and he did this when he was here, and I'm like, oh my God, this guy traveled so far out in the solar system.
And I'm sure he really, you know, was thinking about all those things he did. Like, it's not really much of a punishment, is it? Here, go be Captain Kirk.
His final message back was a cry for help that the NASA and the people who sent him on the mission thought he was just like playing like a sick joke with his cry for help. But this is probably when his body got taken over by that thing that turned him into a brainiac monster.
And through all this dialogue, you also learn he's a middle school janitor, just to make it extra like, ooh.
So the thing they think that took him over is called a Torellian. And they think that he's now in a Torellian body and he's back on Earth getting revenge. This is all just repeat from last issue now at this point. So for something that has so much dialogue, this is a part where I'm like, well, you kind of already told, you could have cut this section here because I'm reading a lot right now. And I heard all of this last issue. Which I guess, you know, if you weren't reading it in a collection and you were reading this month to month, I guess you might need the reminder.
I don't know, because still, the way it's written confused me, where it almost seemed like Death Watch and Johnny were two separate things. And all they had fought was Death Watch, and now Johnny's loose. Like, I don't know. I had a really hard time following what was going on.
Yeah, what they're trying to get across is that exactly what you said. They're trying to have it both ways, where Johnny is getting revenge on all the people who sent him to prison and testified against him, and like the judge that sent him away. But they're also talking about like, but Death Watch is here and we need to watch out for Death Watch. And it's like, well, who's driving the bus? You know, yeah. Like, which one are we talking about here?
And then you just get this weird moment where they're like, well, we don't have the autopsy results yet. Vanguard and Miss Wells are going to make out now. It's just like, okay.
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah, they just start. That is just shoved in there like, you know, unnecessary makeout session by Vanguard and his girlfriend here. But he says that his iBot named Wally is running tests on both the exoskeleton that, what was the villain's name again?
Deathwatch.
Deathwatch. So they're examining Deathwatch's exoskeleton that they got last issue. And they're also examining Donatello's cyborg body. And so they should go see how he's doing. And then we cut back to New York. And back in New York, Raphael is landing the air car in the old cemetery hideout that they have in this volume. And he puts the alarms on and basically stumbles out of the car, limps his way over to Michelangelo's apartment, and then gets bashed in the head with a baseball bat as soon as he gets in the door.
Typical Raph stuff.
He was already limping.
Wouldn't Casey know the silhouette of a turtle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. And then right before he gets his head bashed in, though, we cut back to the spaceship, which I didn't like the pacing of that, because at this point I was like, okay, so show me lots of Raph now. And they give you like 2 pages of Raph and you're back to the spaceship. It's a little uneven, this issue.
They didn't want you to miss the dialogue they wrote.
And now, exactly, more dialogue. Wally, the thing that was examining the exoskeletons, tells Leonardo that Donatello is brain dead. And we already know this from last issue where the robot body is basically taking over. Donatello, no more. And they get in this big discussion about whether or not the android body kind of like let Donatello die.
Yeah.
Because he said he didn't want the cyborg body to ever take over.
Which would have been more interesting if we hadn't spent so much time getting Johnny's backstory, because we would have got to this quicker. Because this is actually some interesting stuff. And I like that the AI says that the mutagen is kind of what also affected him.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool twist on it. And you're right, it is like an interesting moral thing where you don't know this robot's motivation of, did he, you know, could he have helped Donatello out more in that fight and chose to lay back? Because if Donnie dies, now he gets to take over the body. Really reminds me almost of like some Moon Knight stuff you'd see in the Disney Plus series. Like at this point, like they're both fighting for the body.
See, even right, so the notes are confusing.
I'm just going through my notes right here. So my next note was about the mutagen. You just said that. Donatello's not there.
So the next part's confusing too, because they come to the conclusion that Johnny Lee is alive and in his home state of Arkansas. So again, I don't know if it's supposed to be that Johnny Lee is separate from Death Watch now, or if they're still the same thing.
So, yeah, on the ship, Wally basically broke up a fight that was about to happen between the cyborg and Leonardo, where cyborg Donnie still has his giant Final Fantasy VII sword. And he says, you know, Reborn managed to escape. I found it out through computers somehow. And, because the remains of his body, that's what it was. The body they have is only 2% human tissue. And most of it was exoskeleton. So they know that he got away. So Vanguard arrives with the turtles here. Where are we? Oh, no. Sorry. I'm lost.
So, no, we cut back to Ref.
This is a complicated issue.
We cut back to Ref being nursed by April now that he's been given a concussion by Casey. He's been asleep for 24 hours. What is it about Raph getting knocked out? Seems to be like that's the thing he does. Donnie gets maimed and Raph gets knocked out. So Casey explains that the reason he hit him is because the mob's still looking for Shadow. And
yeah, he thought he was a mob guy breaking in.
Because clearly they look exactly... He doesn't even have his trench coat and hat, like... I don't understand where the confusion was, or if it was just like, I owe him a hit in the head for something. I don't remember what.
So, yeah, after they try to take care of him for a little bit, you know you can't take care of Raphael. He's going to force himself out of bed, and he's going to go talk to the Foot Clan and basically be like, hey, this was supposed to be over. Let me go talk to them. This whole mobsters kidnapping Shadow business. And then we cut back. This is why I don't like the pacing of this issue. Yeah, it's like, I want to follow that Raph story.
They're like, oh, you like that part?
And we cut back to a cornfield.
Here's the part that's confusing.
And the rest of everyone, they've all arrived in Arkansas, and they're right at the crash site for where Death Watch was escaping. And near the crash site, they find a scarecrow. And then they find two more dead bodies in a crater. And they're like, oh, this is a scarecrow. This is a body that he drained of life essence, I think they call it.
See, he's getting artsy now with his killing.
Yeah. I don't know what this farmer did to him. It's not personal anymore.
It's just like in Men in Black when Edgar Bug crashed through the truck. And then just, you know, kind of took over the farmer's body. Same thing.
And then we're back to Raphael. Bouncing back. We got an A and a B story for sure here. Raphael's at the Foot Clan hideout. And he starts, you know, he's very respectful. He's thanking them for protecting his friends while he was gone. And he asks the leader of the Foot Clan, or the leader asks him, rather, if they were able to find Master Splinter. And Raph's like, nope, not just yet. We got a few issues to go before we get there.
We were, you know, busy pumping out some Savage Dragon issues, so Splinter didn't even factor in at that point. I thought it was interesting.
And the Foot Clan's not happy about that because they wanted to ask Splinter for advice on the situation they're in, the conflict between the Foot Clan and the mob people. And it's about to basically go full city at war. They literally say it's about to be a mob war. And we're like, we just did a city at war.
It was like 100 years ago.
Yeah, so someone on this Foot Clan like council stands up and announces that Raphael, you remember a few issues ago he was supposed to assassinate this guy Big Tony, and Michelangelo rescued Shadow instead of that happening, and some of the Foot Clan they want to return Shadow to Tony because they think Shadow belongs with him. And Raphael's like, my family, including Casey, has been raising Shadow. Shadow's mom was with Casey and fully wanted this girl to be raised by Casey, or he would never have gotten custody. So why don't you guys let that happen? But basically, kind of like during all this conversation of does she belong with Casey? Does she belong with her biological family? Before they can really resolve anything, a bomb goes off in the building and they accuse Raphael of being followed. And he's like, no way, man. I wasn't followed. I'm a pro. You guys have someone on the inside. You guys don't. You They're all pointing fingers when they should be scattering. And then basically we end the issue with the Untouchables coming in here. They're in the trench coats and they got Tommy guns like from the Batman animated series, and they blow away the Foot Clan with their bullets while Raphael hides, and that's how we end the issue.
Which is frustrating because I feel like all the really good bits in this issue, they don't spend time with.
Yeah, like I would have much rather have seen more of this Raphael story of him coming home and then talking to Casey, and then maybe he doesn't go straight to the Foot Clan. He does a little bit of detective work to try to figure out because they had that whole bit we didn't even mention, that Casey Jones, there were two guys that were staking out Casey's apartment that got killed. And Casey Jones was basically like, thanks for killing those guys for us, Raph. And Raphael's like, I didn't kill those guys.
Yeah.
And like, it would have been cool to see like more investigation into that before he just straight up assumes it was the Foot Clan and goes straight there. You know, something. I don't know. I would much rather see that than this. Or like, I don't even mind the serial killer story. It just feels weird the way they're cutting between the two.
Yeah, because I think it's the thing that hurts it is it's all dialogue. It's not like, hey, here's panel images of him, you know, traveling to these places and stuff. It's just,
that's exactly right. So that's what it is. Is the Raphael story doesn't require so much explaining, whereas they have to explain everything about the other story. They have to explain what this space station is. They have to explain who these people are. They have to explain who this villain is, where he comes from, why he's mad, who he's killing. And with the Raphael thing, it's like that stuff actually ties in with the story we've been telling so far. Whereas the serial killer thing is kind of wedging its way into the story we've been telling so far.
And it's frustrating that they even have the Foot mentioned Splinter, because that was the goal. Like, that was their next goal. And we're so far off the rails from that now. I don't even remember
the carrot.
When they get back
that's
to
the
that.
Carrot they're going to dangle in front of readers for a couple of issues now is, when are we going to find Splinter? It's going to go all the way into the next volume. Spoiler alert. Before we're like, all right, let's find Splinter. Because anytime Master Splinter is missing in a Turtles comic, you're on edge. It goes all the way back to, you know, the original 1990 movie.
Right.
When Shredder had Splinter. You want to, the arcade game, same thing. They kidnapped Splinter in the arcade game. You go save him there.
But imagine if in all those instances they just went and did other stuff.
Yeah. Imagine if in the 1990 Turtle movie, the Foot Clan kidnaps Splinter, and then while they're on their way to find out where they're hiding him, they're like, oh, but there's a serial killer on the loose, and we need to investigate this. It's like, yeah, that's probably something you guys should do because you're heroes, but we don't want to see it structured that way as a story.
Leo is not leading is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So I gave this a 3.8 just because it was so all over the place and confusing and so dialogue heavy.
Maybe I'm in a bad mood. I don't know. I gave it a 2.
Oh,
like
wow.
This so far, I feel like out of all the Image comics, this is the worst Image one we've done. Because it's just like, it's very, I know I keep repeating it, but it's very exposition heavy. It's very, this is not a light read. And you don't come away from it being like, well, I'm glad I put in the effort to actually absorb it all, because it feels like this serial killer story is going to be over and I'm just going to be like, well, I wish I spent more time with the story that's going to stick around.
Yeah, it's almost like they went too far down the Savage Dragon street and realized they were lost and were like, I don't know how to write us out of this yet.
Which is weird because that story has the better villain.
Right.
You know, I don't like the mob story. I don't like the mob as like the villain. You know what I mean? They're not like, they're not very interesting as the antagonist, but the Death Watch character is really cool. Like I said, he's a cool design. He looks like Brainiac. He's, you know, sucking the life force out of people. Yeah. I should be more interested in that story and I'm not. Like, Death Watch is really cool. And unfortunately, I feel like the peak of his appeal was that first time we saw him in that full page at the end of whatever issue that was where the turtles are peeking in the window with Savage Dragon. Like, I think that was, like, the peak of his appeal, and it's all downhill from there. You set up this really cool villain, and it doesn't go anywhere.
You're explaining it in a way.
Well, it goes somewhere, but... No one, there's bumps along the journey.
So I had trouble coming up with a title for this one. I settled on The Janitor That Fell to Earth.
That's a good title. Let's see. I'm gonna come up with a title for this one on the fly here because I don't like what I wrote. So. Let's see. I'm trying to think of something with the scarecrow here.
Yeah, I tried to go that route and I couldn't think of anything.
Yeah. I got nothing. This is a hard issue to title because it's all just explaining what's going on. You know what? I'm going to title it. I'm going to go with what I have here. I wrote setting up the pieces because sometimes comic book titles aren't puns. Sometimes they're just, you know, a title of what you're going to get. And what you're going to get with this issue is setting up the pieces. We're moving all the pieces to where the story's about to go.
Yeah. So, no, it's probably not my lowest rated in terms of the numbers, but I would agree it's the weakest Image book so far, period.
Yeah, and at least next week we get some really cool visuals. Which I don't want to give away too much, but it picks up. The storytelling definitely picks up, but I don't know. I'm not feeling this issue. I'm not. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, listeners. Sorry for wasting your time. I know we only come at you once a week, and I feel bad when the issue isn't something that I can get hyped for, but this one... It's not the worst issue we've ever done, but it and it's a necessary evil at the same time because, like, it's just like when those Netflix shows have, like, a filler episode.
Yeah, you know?
Most of the stuff in the filler episode is necessary for the story. You just don't want to have to sit through it. And that's what this is. This is like, you know, in Daredevil season 3, they have that episode where Karen goes back to where she came from?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's that.
And it's like all filler, like it's all backstory and explanation. That's like what this issue is.
Yeah. But in this issue's favor, it's not a guest error book that somehow goes 3 issues. So at least we're moving on.
At the same time, it's at least still in continuity. Like, you True. Can't just say, like, well, this issue doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, I like that. I like that we're still telling an ongoing story.
Right.
So, that was our thoughts on that there, then, dang. And that is our episode for this week. Join us next week, where we'll be covering Lucky Number 13. We're like halfway into this Image volume at this point. Almost.